How To Medieval, the how-to where two guys show you how to do it between the two of them. I am Ari.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're going to talk to you about mini-events. Now, we are on the cusp of going back into associating in person, and while I want digital events and digital activities to continue in some form, I would like to distill the best of what we had to learn in this last year. I am also very excited to go back and interact with people person to person. But one of the things I've been playing around and thinking about over the course of our isolation is, do we have a use for smaller types of association in medieval living history that are not grand events? Because when I think of a big event, we're talking about my annual pilgrimage to Days of Nights. We're talking about large-scale SCA wars. We're talking about weekend encampments and demos at Ren Fairs. And these are large undertakings. They take a lot of resources. They take a lot of both physically, you know, your actual monetary resources. They take up a lot of bandwidth when it comes to preparing for your day and the logistics of getting there and back again. They can be financially expensive. But there's also ways to get together or ways to nestle activities into other types of events that are not necessarily so grandiose, and they kind of create a more entry-level way of doing medieval type events. And I know that you, Matt, have actually a lot of experience with doing something like this.
Yeah, I have some experience doing some things like that. I've put together a couple of sort of mini themed events outside of the SCA, and then I run a fairly large mini event within that takes place within a larger SCA event. I run a deed of arms at Great Northeastern War that happens up in Hebron Pines, Maine, July is when it usually happens. Of course, for the past 2 years, it was canceled last year. It's been canceled this year. So we're planning on doing something fairly big when we get back into it, though, in 2022. But that was a way to do an event that has a slightly different rule set than what normal SCA events have. The SCA overall rule set for any event really is that, you know, the number one rule is you have to make an attempt at pre-17th century clothing. And that word attempt leaves a really lot of gray area and wiggle room for what actually is and isn't, you know, historical. It's really more of a try to get a flavor for it than having it strictly down to documentable historical clothing or attire. Now, the deed, as it locally known, just they just shortened it from the deed of arms to the deed, that had a different rule set, and that had a slightly stricter appearance levels, and it was based primarily for the 14th century, mid 14th century, with some wiggle room to early and late. So most guys show up for it wearing something within the 14. God, what kind of a rank amateur am I? Most guys usually show up dressed in something between 1360 and 1400, the later end of the 14th century, armor and clothes. And we had a large viewing gallery for people to come, and it became quite a large event. Every year I would design themes for the fighting. One year it was based off of the Canterbury Tales. One year it was based off of Heroes of Antiquity. That was a good one because I basically took medievalized Greek myths and designed fighting challenges around them. That was a lot of fun.
Well, that's exciting. That goes back to what I like to think of as the absurd example in my little brief recap on what reenactment and living history is, where I was talking about you're reenacting a 14th century person reenacting a first century Roman based off of history, and it's just the inception of impressions goes in a circle.
Oh yeah. It is fun to think about that, because it does, when you're researching it, it requires you to think of things as your medieval counterpart would have. Because, I mean, we can research Greek myths all day long, but most research that we find now is, you know, what the Greek myths were. So it puts a whole new spin on the researching of trying to figure out, well, what did the 14th century, you know, scholars, when they were reading the Greek myths, how did, you know, if they were reading the Greek myths, how did they interpret these things? So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's a completely different topic. And it's actually one of those interesting segues into kind of the change between what we would consider Middle Ages or the medieval eras and the Renaissance came a lot from the medieval perspective on classic Greek and classical Roman literature. And that's sort of what the birth of the Renaissance was. So it's always interesting to try and interpret something. It's hard enough to interpret ancient texts as is, and then to try and reinterpret them through a mindset that is requires its own interpretation is definitely a dizzying but entertaining subject matter. My question to you about this deed is, what makes you refer to it as a mini event compared to, you know, sort of for people's context, what is the difference between what we would say is an event big E or an event mini E, like a mini event or a small event? What we're kind of talking about is something that's, where is that line? Do you think is it the number of people? Do you consider it to be the timeline or the investment of energy? Do you have sort of a sense of what makes you feel that deed is mini?
I really think a mini event, if we're going to try to classify what they are, is something that is small in scale of focus. So when we're doing the deed of arms, it is literally focused just on that deed of arms. All there is there's the gallery and the fighting. Yeah, some things take part, you know, that make them a little bigger. It's like for years now, people have been donating their time and energy to build like this elaborate feast to serve the people of the gallery. And it really makes the gallery seem like, you know, visiting nobility who are being served, you know, drinks and wine and period correct appetizers and things like that. So a mini event doesn't have to be small as in you've only got five people or you're only doing one specific, you know, very specific thing, but it's sort of the scope of focus is small. We're not there to do fighting and dancing and archery and calligraphy and all of these things together that form these large events. Where normally, when you have a large event, you have more than one or two activities going on at any one given time. When these mini events, by nature, they are smaller because they do require more investment by the people attending it. So, like I said, with the deed of arms, we have a very specific rule set and we have specific appearance rule sets for who's allowed to fight and who's allowed to be part of the gallery. We want it to look a specific way. It's supposed to be a slightly more immersive experience than the regular SCA standards. So yeah, there's some wiggle room as everything. I'm one of those people where I like to reward true growth and concerted attempts, because that's the only way I ever think anybody grows, is you have to reward the work they've done in order to get them to do more work. If they do a lot, you know, if there's somebody coming in from the basic blue pickle barrel SCA armor saying, I want to do this, and we're like, no, we're not going to do that. But if they come in the next year and maybe they still have that armor, but they've shown a really nice jupon to cover it with, so you can't really see it. and they've tried to upgrade their helmet or at least do some work on the helmet to make it. And yeah, I probably will let them take part in it because they're showing that they've put in the work to want to be there. And most of the times when they start doing that, once they've taken part in it, they go, this is awesome. I want to do more. And mm-hmm. it sort of starts them on their path into building it. But so I mean, that's what really mean, you know, the mini events, they do take a lot more investment for the people attending and putting it on, because we usually have a specific goal in mind. We're either trying to recreate this tournament, you know, this deed of arms tournament from, you know, the mid 14th century with all its grandiose, you know, banners and the viewing gallery and things like that. Or it's a smaller one, like you're trying to recreate the atmosphere of a medieval feast for a specific time frame. So you want people to be dressed of that time frame, using implements of that time frame, eating food of that time frame. So really, that's to get back to what I was talking about before. I really think that's what makes a mini event is the scale of scope. And they tend to be smaller in scope with more defined criteria for what they want to achieve, the goals they're trying to achieve.
Now, an important contrast is, and I find it interesting that we're using the term deed because it's actually really useful in this context. The deed that you're talking about is a, like you said, a narrowly focused event, both on time and intent, but it's also not, it doesn't incorporate a lot of other activities. It has this one objective and kind of blinders, even though some things have been added on top. And I see that in contrast to the, for instance, the Kansas City Sword Guild, now the Historical Swordsman's Guild of Kansas City, or Historical European Martial Arts Guild of Kansas City. I'll have to look it up. They changed their name. But the same general people, we all know who we're talking about, they have this annual, though it's likewise been canceled a couple times because of the pandemic, this annual deed of arms, but it's called a deed of arms, but it is very much a big E event because it's multiple days. It has camping. It has food provided, not just once for the gallery, but it has multiple meals. It brings in instructors from around the FEMA and Living History community. They put on classes. And while it's just called a deed of arms and there is fighting and there are tournaments to be had, but they also have dagger tournaments and blast tournaments and a squire's list and a knight's list. And so it has so many layers of things to do. And over such a long period of time, it requires a team of people to organize, and it requires a considerable amount of financial investment to pull off, and it has an entry fee for the participants. So it's a really big thing, even though it's also just called a deed of arms. And what I think about when I, in my head, I think mini event, I definitely agree with you on the idea of having it narrow and focused. When I think about mini events, or some of the mini events that I would like to participate this next coming season, is the scope is small and the purpose is small, but also the number of people is generally small. And what I worry about when it comes to the number of people is that the more moving parts you have, the more individuals, the more cats there are being herded, then the complexity of pulling the event off goes up and the expectation of certain things starts to go up. So the more people you have, the more there might be an implicit expectation that there's food or access to camping because people might want to come from a long way away. And it starts to develop into a large logistic hurdle. So a couple of the things that I've been planning to do once we get back into it is, before the pandemic really started, I was doing what was called the Medieval March. And it was, all it was a hike in period clothing. And the idea was, get used to your gear. You know, we sometimes go out and, you know, if it takes 2 days of wear to break in a pair of shoes, but you wear them once or twice a year, it could take you a very long time to break in a pair of shoes. But if you go out once or twice a month and do a 3 or 4 hour hike, then you have a really, you know, good worked in comfortable pair of shoes. You learn whether or not they're slippery or not. You find out where your clothes fit or don't fit, what the best way to carry your gear is. Maybe it provides a little bit of insight into why we see people wearing their belts the way they do or sling their packs the way they do. And it was not meant to be anything other than, let's just go on this trail around the park and hike. And we can talk about personal life. We can talk about period stuff. But the idea was, let's just get a couple people together and go for a walk. And I wanted to do a couple other small things like this, wherein you have, like, I really want to play stump ball, but I don't want it to be a intramural, multi-generational stump ball tournament. I don't need a stump ball league. I just want to go out with three or four people. And the concept behind that is, okay, you, your family, and a friend or two at the end of a work day or on a weekend, just, you know, go behind the house and play around a stump ball just for fun. And, you know, there's the reason that it started as a game with just your hands and a stump, and it didn't require bats and stools and wickets and things. You know, you were able to just go play. And who cares about the score? Who cares about, you know, we can make up the rules as we go along, considering that we really have to do that anyway, based on the research we have available to us. But it's not, there's a line between, like, there's a line between, let's have a meeting about something. There's lots of things where it's like, we're going to go do a sewing moot and we're going to sew some clothing. But the idea isn't that it's a medieval event where you're going and it's, you are portraying a group of seamstresses in a guild making things. You could turn it into that, but until you've put some intentionality behind it, it's not really an event. And in the same way that that medieval march, since there was no story or intentionality behind it, except just to put on our clothes and stress test it, I never really considered it an event. However, if we were to say and tell a little bit of a story, because that's really what these events are, we're telling a story. You know, when you do a deed of arms, you have, you are gathering nobles from around your country, or you're gathering nobles from either side of a two armies that are currently at truce, and it's, you know, there's layers of subtext. There's the skill of arms, there's the display of the kingdom, there's this adversarial aspect. And so if you add a little bit of story to it, but you don't make it such a logistic nightmare that it actually requires organizing, that's where I see the line for mini event coming in.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It all goes back to what do we define as an event? And I think you're right that an event is something where basically all the attendees have agreed upon. It's an event. It's not just a meeting. It's not just getting together in your backyard and doing something. I've done a couple of medieval hikes as well with people, and I've considered them more like mini events because we have all gotten together and spent a day not just stress testing, but, you know, going out in the woods and exploring, you know, in our gear, actually trying to live in the gear a bit. So.
Or you do something like you layer something on top where we're off on a hunt. Or maybe, you know, none of us are dressed as nobles, but we're dressed as the huntsmen. So we're out checking deer trails for the nobles' next hunt. You know, the count is going to be in Manor this next weekend, and he's going to want to go for a hunt. So let's check the game. And so you can then take what is otherwise just a hunt, or a hike in funny clothing, and turn it into a woodsman's expedition. And we see this a lot. I don't hear about it a lot in medieval cultures, but the living history cultures that portray medieval. I see it a lot in things like World War II, though, where you'll get four or five guys together and they'll have a training event where they do their drill and ceremony, and then they go off and they, quote, do a patrol. And they don't expect to actually engage the enemy because it's not a tactical event. There is no enemy there. But then think about how many times a World War II soldier goes out into the woods and does a patrol and never encounters the enemy, right? More times than not. And so it's a perfectly period experience, but without a whole lot of investment in dealing with ammunition stores and safety checks and getting opposing personas there. And we could do this a lot in things like medieval. We could go out and check for outlaws. We can go out and hunt. We can go on. We don't have to go on a full 69-mile pilgrimage and spend the week on the trail. to go out hiking and put on pilgrim outfit and do a 5-mile segment of our pilgrimage. And, you know, it took you however many days to finish your pilgrimage. You only got to the shrine or to the cathedral at the very end. So you could have the middle bit, and then you have that narrowly focused event that is meant only to reference these long stretches in the middle of the pilgrimage where you didn't ever actually see anything and you just sort of enjoyed nature or, you know, endured the treachery depending on why you were on pilgrimage. And these are the things that I, in my head, call mini events, these small little looks into events that people would participate in without having to go out for a whole weekend. You know, think of a medieval person who sits down and plays a board game with a friend in the evening. That could be two hours most in living history garments, sitting down at a table and playing some medieval games back and forth and then going home. You know, you've done an event. You've also practiced your ability to play that game, and you've managed to put on your clothes, which you've invested all this time and money into, but it didn't require a ton of setup. It was something that you could almost do casually, which is kind of why I'm leaning towards these ideas of trying to develop some mini events in the local area that I've got going here, is because I think maybe, and I don't know if I'm going a little too far with this, but everyone's eager to go to a big event, but have we been out of conditioning long enough that maybe we should spend a little time just easing back into medievalism?
So before we went into lockdown away from everybody in 2020, I had actually started to see within the SCA a lot of people getting burned out from the large events, because large events take a lot of people to run.
Mm-hmm.
And if every single event every weekend turns into a large event, you have fighting and you have fencing and you have archery and you have brewing and you have classes and you have court and you have all, it's like people just get burned out. They don't want to run anymore. And mm-hmm. people actually also get burned out going to the large event. I was actually starting to see a lot of people looking for ways to do smaller, more immersion filled events, where, so in the SCA, when you run an event that's public, you can't, basically, as long as people show up with the base requirement of an attempt at pre-17th century clothing, unless there's some other, you know, legal or some other reason, you can't deny them entry. So if I was to run a 15th century event, and, you know, on its own, and somebody showed up in Roman gear, I couldn't be like, no, you can't come in because you're not dressed 15th century. That would get me in trouble. But you can, of course, you know, put out the call saying, you know, we really want this to be an immersion event. We're asking people to try to meet the flavor of the event as best they can. And most people will do that, because I think a lot of people do want these more immersion events where it actually, for that, even for a split second, pulls you out of the modern and you're like, oh my gosh, I was there. Because those moments are amazing. So with this call for sort of these smaller, more immersive events, you know, everyone was always like, well, people aren't going to be able to go to as many events. They're not going to be able to. If you're having a smaller immersive event somewhere, it doesn't mean that somewhere else locally can't also have a small immersive event for a completely different era. So like, you can have on one side of town, a 15th century event where everybody who does the 15th century is going to want to go to. And on the other side of town, you can have a Roman event where everybody who does Roman is going to want to go to.
I mean, that's effectively how it happens outside of the SCA. Most living history events are usually at best a century long. And if you have an immersion event for your living history group, you're probably going to have a very narrowly focused timeline that for the people who attend, unless you're doing something like a timeline event. But even then, each segment of the timeline is a narrowly focused impression. And you know, you get these ideas about making choices. Oh, if you have an event, then no one else can have an event the same day. If you're at a huge event, you're at a war or some sort of symposium, just like at a conference, a professional conference, a lot of times you have panels running in parallel. You go to a big Comic-Con, and you have to make a choice between whether or not you want to go to panel A or panel B. At a big event, you know, if there's a heavy weapons tournament, the exact same time there's an archery tournament, you still have to decide which one you're going to go to. It's not really feasible to jump back and forth between them. It's not like you can go slash to slash in between every volley of arrows. You've got to make a decision. And so the question is, have you lost anything or have you gained something by having an event that is narrowly focused on an archery tournament? Or even more so, if we're really talking about, instead of breaking down and having moderate sized events, but a mini event where it's not even a tournament at all. If we want to use that whole make it very easy to entry idea, then you have, say, okay, well, it's the 2 hours that we're expected to loose arrows as Englishmen after church. So we're going to go this afternoon and we're just going to go shoot arrows together. It'll be fun. And that can be a mini event. And that event can probably accommodate some variation in historical impression or be really very narrowly focused to say, hey, you know, these are the people from this one particular town are getting together out back and shooting at the mounds. That can be an event. And there is a value, obviously, in the SCA to having these large scale tournaments that really accept and allow everyone in all at once. But that doesn't change the fact that people are still going to have to make a decision between two events. And I know I value very much that, as you were talking about, attaining that the high of feeling like the real world has stripped away and you got as close to time travel as you can. I have found that a uniformity of impression leads to that sense of immersion and that ability to sort of lose yourself in what you guys are doing easier. It's a lot harder to do that when you are sitting across the table at a feast from someone who's 3 centuries and 7 continents different than you, and there's no reason historically why you would be interacting. And I realize that doesn't bother some people, but I know it pulls me out of the immersion. And while it's also fun to associate with the broader range of history nerds that like to play dressed up, these mini events may be a quick and easy way to sort of get that little bit of a rush without having to either set aside a ton of time or money. And there's also something to be said about if you have a mini event that's only a couple hours long, that to me, I mean, if you have a whole free weekend, that means there's other events you can also attend.
I'll admit that since starting doing my own little mini events, as we're calling them, with people with that smaller scope and tighter time frame to try to get those magic moments there, it's actually made me enjoy the times I am at the larger SCA event more, because I can actually enjoy the SCA for what it is and what it's meant to be, instead of trying to cram my own expectations of a medieval experience inside of it.
So, because you've already gotten your fix beforehand?
Because I've already gotten my fix beforehand, and I can just enjoy my time with my friends, you know, doing things in the SCA. And I'm not saying that there aren't moments in the SCA where that happens, because there are. There are, you know, many times where you get with the right group of people and you're doing something that you've already, basically you're running your own mini event inside a larger SCA event, and it gives you that moment. But it is easier to do if you're doing it on your own and not having to, you know, worry about the Roman walking through your 14th century encampment and going, oh no, why did you do that? You know, so it's, and when we say bother us, folks, I mean, it doesn't, we're not saying that this keeps us up at night or that we, you know, secretly hate all these people who ruin it for us, because that's not true at all. It's just, there's this sort of, you know, euphoria that you get when you get that magic moment for just a minute, and you're constantly trying to catch that again. And it's easier to do when people are all portraying the same time period. So the only really valid reason I have seen for holding a more structured mini event where you have like the smaller attendance is possibly not being able to pay for the space that you are renting to hold it because you don't have enough attendance to cover and you don't want to charge a fee that the fee to attend itself becomes a deterrent to attendance. So if you're only going to be able to have 15 to 20 people in an event and you need to rent a space, it's going to cost you, you know, so much money that you have to charge $70 a ticket. You're not going to get that 15 to 20 people there because they're not going to want to pay that much money to do it.
It is very difficult to provide, like you said, $70 worth of value to do 2 hours of some small narrow activity. And there's also another cost factor here that we can consider in that when you have a large event, the more people you have there, the more things you do that are potentially dangerous, the higher likelihood you need to have insurance involved. And I know that the SCA comes prepackaged with some insurance, but most living history events are either independently insured for that event itself, or the living history group or one of the people in the group have some sort of private insurance that covers these types of activities. But if you're just going on a walk or you're pretending to be on a hunt and you're not going to be getting into some situation where people will then, you know, strangers will sue you, you don't have to have that cost involved. There's no insurance liability to playing primitive chess against each other, because if someone like hauls off and hits you with the chessboard, that's not really an insurance issue at this point. That's just two people behaving poorly. But if you have a structured event where everyone there is bringing their own heavy steel bar with which to whack each other in the head, then you definitely have a major insurance concern. And that's something that attendees will also want to know is in place for them, which then going back to my original feeling of what a mini event is that creates so much more logistic work on the part of the organizers and added burdens of waivers and money on behalf of the attendants that you really have breached into big E event territory.
Well, I will say as a side note, if you are a reenactor of any level and you're going out, you know, even if you're in the SCA and you're going to an SCA event or you're going out anywhere that interacts with the public at all, get reenactors insurance. Google it.
Oh, yes, definitely. Now, that's the wild card. There are public events. We're talking about, and in my opinion, this conversation should only be applied to immersion events with other reenactors. I was not even taking into this calculus dealing with the populace, and I'm really glad you brought that up.
So, even if you're just dealing with other reenactors, I have reenactors insurance. It's fairly inexpensive. I think I pay $40 a year for like a $2 million liability coverage or something like that. So Google it.
You got off easy.
Yeah.
I got my insurance to quote me for, and, you know, the same kind of thing. I was looking for, you know, $2 million for reenactment purposes. And they wanted to charge me like $360 a year. So
well, I go through, it's actually called reenactorsinsurance.com.
I might have to consider that. I just went through the guy who does my house and my car. I was thinking, hey, if you want, you can bundle those two things. You may as well bundle my weird hobby, but maybe not.
Yeah, no, this one, I looked into that. This sidetrack, but anyway, I looked into that too.
Well, no, this is a good part. If we open up this box of this can of worms, it's actually important to go through this. I don't mind at all sharing how much it costs me to do things, because otherwise, how else is someone else going to know? And I never even heard of reenactor insurance specifically. It's a website that caters to reenactors specifically.
Okay, they cater specifically to reenactors, and they work through an insurance company that specifically does things for reenactors. I just re-upped mine. I just got my new insurance card.
We will most definitely be putting that in the show notes.
Yeah, it looks like it goes through Accord Insurance. It's a certificate of liability insurance. And yeah, so I get $2 million coverage for each occurrence, damage to rented premises, $1 million coverage, personal injury, $2 million, general aggregate, $5 million, products comp, whatever that means, 2 million. Damage to rented stuff, a million.
Now, if you don't mind continuing down this rabbit trail, because it's a great one, does this company require you to have either policies or personal procedures or something written in place to show how you go about being safe enough to insure in what you do?
I don't remember. I'd have to go through and look, because I've had it for a number of years, so I just re-up it every year.
Uh-huh.
So it definitely has you fill out, you know, some things, but it can either be done for individuals or for groups. So they have things differently on it. But I don't remember exactly what I filled out. I'd have to go through and look at it again, but yeah, no. So it's, I think it's just,
I know before I finished my quote, they asked me to submit my safety policies and what my, you know, procedures for things were, and pretty much to have a booklet of what my policies and procedures were as a reenactor to show whether or not I was having safe practices. And so maybe my great grand total is because I didn't write a very good safety manual or something.
Maybe.
Like that.
So I'm looking at it, and it's just reenactorsinsurance.com. And that basically they're a group of reenactors and living history performers who got together and said, we want better insurance for all of us. So they started it, and they have weapons safety stuff. So, you know, classes and things like that they have listed on there. They have member services you can do. You can get insurance for an event, a single event.
I've
had a lot of, thankfully I've never had to use it, but I've had a really good dealings with them. So
I'm glad to hear that. And that seems like it's a really low barrier to entry too. If you think about it, you can spend $45 just to rent a shelter at a larger park. I know that near us, we've got little shelters at the park that you can reserve for almost nothing, but at the big Wyandotte County Park, I'm pretty sure the large shelter, if you want to cordon off that large shelter to have a big party, it'll cost you $35-$40, which means you're actually spending more on a shelter than you are to have your little event than you are to insure yourself for anything you do the whole year round. That's actually a fantastic deal. So that's something to look into.
And if you're planning on doing like a mini event, a lot of places won't rent to you unless you can prove you're insured. So
that's true, especially when you're talking about dealing with the public. And at that point, if you're trying to bring the public in, you're no longer doing a mini event. Like you have just, you've done.
Even I know I've tried to rent things for SDA events up here, and a lot of places, if I cannot prove insurance, luckily through the SDA, you can prove, you can get proof of insurance. But a lot of places, the first thing they ask, like, are you insured? Because they don't want somebody coming to their space, tripping over something and then suing them.
Right, because you know they can't sue the part-time CPA who's also, portrays who's there to, because he doesn't got any money left. He's spent it all on his armor.
Yeah.
I can see that. So that's definitely a consideration. But even then, if you find inexpensive insurance like that or a reasonable insurance like that, you can still keep the barrier to entry low. I mean, I personally could handle $30 a year and never have to charge anyone to come to some hike with me and still feel confident that we are insured if something happened. That provides me a lot of comfort in that. I was thinking that most of these mini events probably are so small that it wouldn't be a consideration, but then why bother worrying about it? That's actually a really good thing. I might have to go and do some homework after this episode is over.
Yeah, so that's why I got it. Well, I got it for the most part when I started doing talks with schools, because schools definitely want you to know that you're insured.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it for doing the talks, but then I realized basically I'm just covered for any time I put on gear and go out somewhere. If anything were to happen, I'm covered.
That's good. So. Okay. Yeah, I suggest that everyone get insured. I mean, until such a point as you personally can pay off people, it makes no sense not to be insured. It's you know, at some point, there is someone, if things go bad, are going to ask you for more than you have to give them person to person. And insurance is immensely valuable. I cannot imagine what life would be like without it. Not that it isn't complicated and frustrating, and there's definitely work to be done in the insurance industry in general, but to live without it sounds terrifying. I wouldn't drive a car if I couldn't put insurance on it. That's just insane.
Yeah.
So, no, that's good. This is actually really good. Now, to sum up, we've gone off way off into, you know, business practices, but when we're talking about mini events, is it safe to say, as a good recap, regardless of the amount of attendance, the idea is that the focus and intention of the event is very narrow. You may be reenacting something as narrow as one afternoon on a specific day, and the volume of people that are going to be there is low, and the expectation of people's conduct is going to be likewise narrowly focused on that small objective, and most people are going to conform to that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's a really good breakdown of what a mini event could be considered.
Now, having done mini events at larger events where your event is much more rigorously focused than the rest, how much pushback have you found about people trying to worm their way into or sort of open up the focus of your event for their own participation? Have you encountered that? Is this something that people who put together a mini event might encounter?
I have encountered very little, and the majority of stuff that I've encountered hasn't been a malintent. It's been more misunderstanding of what the rules and scope of the mini event are. And like I said, I tend to, if people show the putting in the work and showing the desire to actually want to be there and do it, then I tend to be a little more, you know, lenient on them. Now, I mean, if somebody showed up in perfect Roman gear and was like, I want to be in your deed, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I you're not anywhere near the rules for this. I'm really sorry. That happened to me once, where basically I had somebody who had a gorgeous Viking impression, and he didn't show up to the event, but he really wanted to do it. And he's like, can I please just use my gear? I'm like, I know. I'm like, that completely throws everything off. But what we did is we worked together, and I actually put together a Viking themed mini event that took place earlier in the day. They like to, I'm trying to figure out a different name for it. It somehow got the moniker of the Viking Deed, but it's not a deed of arms.
Doesn't make much sense. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, so basically I helped them build what they wanted to do. It's that same idea, though, of narrow and focused, stricter appearance guidelines, different fighting methodologies than the regular SCA fighting. And that grew, and people have loved doing that one as well.
Well, that's good. And now, did you have, for both of these events, the SCA rule set that you both have to conform to and can use as guidance, correct?
Yes. So, I built what I did off of another similar mini event that happens at Penzic every year, and that was called the Combat of the 30. And originally, I was trying to clone that. I was trying to make it basically the same as what they did at Penzic. But theirs was literally just, you get 30 guys per team getting on the field and fighting in 14th century gear. That's it. So all it was about the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with a friend who had done that one for years. I think he was one of the first people to do it. And he's like, if you want to make this successful, you really need to make it your own and make it your own thing. So I really started looking into sort of the grand tournaments of Edward III. And he used to do, you know, really grand themed tournaments. You know, one of his most famous ones, he had the knights come in, some were dressed as cardinals and some were dressed as priests, I think, or something like that. But, you know, he would do elaborate costumes, elaborate themes, and they would span over days. And I was like, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm really going to make it more like those grand 14th century themed tournaments and really lean into that and try to get away from the combat of the 30 mold that I was trying to duplicate. And I really think that's what made it better, too. I've had people who've been in the SCA for 30 years doing this company saying they've never done anything like this and they absolutely love it. It's exactly what they wanted to do when they first started doing the SCA. So that's been a real sort of feather in my cap, if I can say that.
That's pretty awesome. Now, outside of the SCA, if you want to do a MIDI event that involves any sort of combat, it really depends on whether or not you're going to conform to like the Accords or to the Concords, and there's various rule sets out there based on your time period and such. I would just suggest to make it, especially for smaller events, if you're going to, quote, do sort of like training events, that they be probably as little on the adversarial side as possible, because then that makes it, once you have a tournament and it's competition and people, you know, are expecting to win, then you've got like the want for prizes and things. And so my suggestion would be that it makes a lot more sense to have a mini event that involves combat to be, oh, we're going to go and today we're going to train with the sword in the way that, you know, hey, we're going to go out to the courtyard and train at the sword, compared to we're going to have like a formalized tournament. Because at some point it's the idea that if you're going to have a tournament, you're going to hit a level of, it's going to be grand enough that it's like throwing a birthday party. You either have just a get-together or you have a party. And at some point, you have to really concede that you're going to have a party. And the party, there's certain, not necessarily requirements, but social expectations, you know, especially like a kid's birthday party. You're going to have hats and cakes and balloons and things. And if you're not going to do any of that, then it's not really considered a party anymore. You're just sort of having a get-together with friends, which is, you know, what ends up happening once children become teenagers and don't like cool things anymore. Because I still like the cake and the balloons, but
I think what Ari's trying to say is, if it's your first time throwing a party, don't throw a quinceañera.
Oh goodness gracious! Yes, wow, that summed it up a whole lot better than I was rambling on to. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like if you're gonna throw a big deed, accept that that's what your event is. It's like, you know, back in some of our conversations we've had about like the poor knight. At some point, if you're going to portray a specific role, you just have to accept that you're going to have to go all in, both feet, and portray it the correct way. And so if you're going to do an event, at some point you have to acknowledge that certain types of social interactions they're not small events. And you have to either decide whether or not you want to construct a smaller version of that is plausible, or go in all the way and do a proper tournament.
And even the deed that I run, you know, I don't do it by myself anymore. I haven't been able to run it by myself for a number of years. It's really on the cusp of probably, if I wanted to throw my own weekend event based solely on that, I would get enough people to come. I could probably move to turning it into its own event, full event, than just a mini event that happens within a larger event. And for years, my good friend Roger Young from down in Delaware for 6 years, he's driven up to Maine every summer and helped me put on this thing. He usually does the food and some of the prizes he's brought up. I have friends, another friend, Danielle, who, and Aaron, who have helped me do the gallery for a couple of years and have sort of been in charge of that and in charge of getting a herald to come. Aaron, of course, has even heralded her own a couple of times. So it's really become, even smaller events, small scope events, can become big enough that you need to bring in help. And don't be afraid to bring in help and ask for help. That was one of my biggest problems for years. Is I didn't want anyone to help. I wanted to do it all myself. And bringing in those people has just become stronger and run better than it could have been trying to do it by myself.
Well, I definitely follow along with what you're saying. So as we're wrapping up here, you and I have come up with a new idea, and I'm pretty excited about it. And so we want to, and we've always really been eager to hear back from you, the audience, your questions, your comments, your feedback. But we talked about it, and we realized that we would really like to actually hear your questions and responses. So we are inviting you to send us an audio clip introducing yourself and asking us a question. You can record it on your phone or record it on your computer. Send it to our email at howtomedieval@gmail.com, T-W-O, howtomedieval. And I will take it into our recording session, and we will listen to you ask your question, and then the two of us will respond and discuss and have a small conversation, and we will submit those and send them out as mini episodes that you guys can listen to yourselves, and we can have a conversation with you guys through the show. So I'm really excited about that, and I am looking forward to anything that you submit to us, and we will answer those things, quote, on air, without having to actually figure out how to take calls on air, because I can't even imagine how to start doing something like that. We'd probably need a phone number, and that's, no thank you. We have email. That works for us, or at least it works for me. So that's the new big project in the works. If you guys submit those things, we'll answer them. If you have questions direct for Matt, you can go ahead and send them in. Matt will answer. And if you have questions direct for me, then I can answer. If it's a general show question, we'll work on it together. And Matt, if we have anything that really goes long, there's no reason why we can't take a really good question and make a full episode out of it.
No, of course. I can talk about this stuff all day.
Well, considering that a number of our past episodes have been inspired entirely by, say, a messenger conversation or a question put in on the board, like we definitely want this show to be built around the things that you're trying to figure out how to do. And if we can't figure out the answer, we'll research it for you. And if we can't figure that out, we'll find a guest who knows the answer, and we'll bring them on too.
Exactly.
Any other thoughts before we close on out today, Matt?
Oh, yeah. I hope you guys are all... I have to say, I have been so amazed and happy with the community engagement that we have got this year doing the Pilgrim Progress Challenge.
We have at least 6 or 7 more people on the leaderboard than we did last year. So just the number of people who have stepped up and put in their steps alone, not even to mention the conversation that we've been having this month, is just, it warms my heart.
It's been great to see people encouraging each other, you know, posting pictures of their walk, you know, talking about the experience of having the walk. One woman did a video blog about, you know, what she's been doing. So it's been great. It's been a great experience. And I can't wait to see who the winner is, and I can't wait for us to do it again next year.
Yeah, no, the community involvement, the conversation, the difference between last year and this year, I think the biggest change that I see that really improved things was that Facebook group. I really have much more of a sense that I got to walk it with everybody this year than I did the year before, and I really like that a lot. It was a great change, and honestly, we could have set up a Facebook page, and it could have done nothing, except that we had a great group of people who were really invested in getting everybody through and having fun during this journey.
And if you all like to have fun getting dressed in medieval gear and hiking through the woods, whether it be in a mini event or just on a Pilgrim's Progress Challenge, talk to us. Let us know. Give us 5 stars so it helps the algorithm bring the app up, bring the feed up for whatever the subscription service you use to listen to us. Follow us on Facebook, and send us in those recordings so we can answer your questions.
Absolutely. And our theme music was made and given us permission to use by Paul Butler. His music is linked in the description below. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Bye, guys.